Okay, so let's see, how are people doing? I know people had a spring break, and so that may have, affected people. But how many people got all four backtracking problems done?
No one.
How many people got three of the backtracking problems done?
No one.
How many people got two of the backtracking problems done?
No one.
How many people got one of the backtracking problems done?
No one.
How many people tried any of the problems over break? Oh my goodness. Okay. And did people meet with frustration? Let's see which problems people tried, and let's talk about that. Okay, we have. Let's take a look at our situation here. How many people tried the Little Bishop's problem? Okay, I'm seeing a bunch of people. What happened when you tried it?
I actually haven't gotten to the point yet where I even can submit it because I can tell that it's going to take too long. My printing is not good enough.
So you're saying that your problem is, are you convinced that it is correct? But too slow.
I haven't even gotten to the point where I'm convinced it's correct because I haven't finished coding it.
Okay.
I can see this is going to take too long. So.
Okay. What's your situation?
Just similar to him. I think I've got the construct candidates working to a certain extent. The big thing is I'm not sure how to prune it.
Okay. Any other people who do get started on Little Bishops? Yeah. You couldn't code it, okay? Too complicated. Well, let's take a look at that, okay? Okay, how many people have, I know there's some other people. How many people tried the 15 puzzle? One or two, what happened when you tried it? 12 hours to complete, okay? How long did it take you, what was your story? You got accepted. Exceptions. What language are you using? Or C. C++. And when you say it's generating exceptions, is that what I would call a for dump, or what? Okay, hold on a second. What's the only way to kill this ventilation? How do you both find the fan annoying in some way? Or my idea. Aggressive start. Let me try one more time to kill some ventilation. Okay. That's not a good sign, is it? Then I guess we will be living with the ventilation for a while. Okay, so you're saying that you had exceptions, meaning what? So you were having problems like it was, you were accessing some location that was wrong. So that's a bad problem. Okay. You had it running, but 12 hours. Okay, anybody try Gardens of Eden? No, and no Stephen Wolfram fans. How many people tried the color hash? Started and haven't figured it out. Okay? Fair enough. Let's go and talk about, so it seems like most of the interest was on the first two problems. Let's see what we can do with the Little Bishop's one. So you're saying that do we have anybody who implemented it and found it was correct but too slow? Okay, or no? So let's think, what is this problem, and let's compare it to the other problems we'd have done. Okay, this problem says you're giving an n by n chessboard. Oh, correct. Please correct me if I'm wrong.
It's been a while. 1, 2, 3, 4.
An n by n chessboard, and you want to put, is that right?
You got one extra row.
One extra row.
Okay.
Now we have an n by n chessboard, and we want to put bishops down on the chessboard, correct? And we want to try to question out how many ways are there to put down k bishops on the chessboard. Okay, where a bishop can move diagonally. Okay? And we want to make sure that the bishops do not attack each other. No two bishops attack each other. Okay?
So let's look at our, what I might say to start things off would be to look at my eight-queen solution, just to remind us of our backtrack routine and how we used it. And then we'll talk about this particular version of it. Okay? Does that seem like a fair way to proceed? Okay? This is sort of, I'm not sure if we went through this last time or not. But what was our backtrack procedure? Just let's remind us again. The basic backtracking program was as follows. We were going to, it's a recursive function that took as input a state vector, okay, an array which we're growing, okay, k, which is the number of how many elements in this array have been set, okay, so far, and whatever data you want to feed the backtrack procedure, okay, maybe like the number of queens and maybe it might be the number of bishops you're allowed to put down, maybe it's the number of the size of the chessboard, I don't know what it is, but something you might want to pass, we'll assume is being passed in that direction, okay? We have an array of candidates that we generate, and how many of them, which candidate we're currently using, and a general counter, okay? So what is the backtracking procedure going to do? We ask, is the current state of our vector a solution? Okay, the vector, state of the vector is described by what our arguments in are. If it is, process that solution. Okay, maybe you print it. In the case of our problem, maybe you count it, right? So all you'd probably be doing is adding one to a counter here. Then what are we going to do? Basically, now consider if we don't have a solution, maybe we can extend it. Okay, to make it a solution. So we increment k to k plus 1, construct candidates. What are the possible candidates for the kth position? Okay? And this is, again, an application-specific routine that takes our input parameters and returns the candidates that are possible for the next position. Then for every possible candidate, try that candidate in the kth position and backtrack. See if now we have a solution or can build from it. If so, we print out, we do whatever we do in that recursive call. If not, when we got back from it, we will have constructed all possible solutions with that plus the new element. Okay? And here we would then print, basically, if there was some Boolean flag that tells us to quit, we quit. But in general, we won't quit. We want to enumerate through all possible candidates. So this will enable us to now go back and try a different candidate in that spot. Once we've tried all possible candidates, we bomb out of this loop, which is going to basically be backtracking. It's what gets us back here. Since in this loop we added 1 to k, backtracking will get us back to the value of k before it. Okay? And that's the nature of the recursion. Any questions about the nature of the recursion or anything like that? Okay? So let's look at now how we can use this basic idea. Any questions about this? If there's any questions, it's a good thing to ask about. Yes?
I said, why are you incrementing k before you do backtracking? Don't you want to check k first and then check?
Well, no, this is starting out with. It's a question of how is it called. Right now, it's going to be called initially with k equals 0. Okay, or something that denotes the fact that you've got nothing in the original vector.
Oh, okay.
Right? And so originally it says basically A is empty. K denotes that A is empty. And again, exactly what that means is basically how you interpret K in the three application-specific routines. Okay? And then we, basically the main thing that we want to be able to do is
Test if we have a solution, process a solution, and construct candidates for it. Okay? Any questions? So let's look at a solution to the eight queens problem, which is somewhat equivalent, similar to the K bishops problem. Okay? So what is the eight queens problem? You probably talked about it in, how many of you saw the eight queens problem sometime before you came in here to this class? Sounds familiar? Okay. What? Rings a bell. Okay, so it's how do you put down eight queens on an 8x8 chessboard such that none of them threaten it? And I know we went through an example of this last class. But let's just look at the code very quickly to see what we're doing. The idea here is that we're going to let our search vector for the eight queens problem, our solution vector, is going to be, this is going to be A1, A2, A3. We're going to have, we notice that we can only put at most one queen in each row. Why in an eight queen solution can't you have more than one queen in the same row? Because they would attack each other, right? Two queens in the same row attack each other. Why do we have to have at least one queen in every row? Okay,
yeah.
Eight rows. You have to have eight queens. You can't put, there's a pigeonhole argument here. You've got eight queens, eight rows, and you can't put two in the same row. Okay, so if you don't put a queen here, you're not going to get a chance to make it up later. Right? So the solution that I would like to try, vector that I want to try, is it's going to be a vector where AI is going to represent the position of the ice, the queen sitting in the ice row. Right? So what is the possible values for the first queen? Which are what? How do we represent the squares in the first row? Well, you say 0 through 7 or 1 through 8, something like that. Basically, the index of the column number which that queen is going to be on. Okay? So I want to claim that my representation is going to be a vector of integers. For each integer, I prefer to count from 1 to 8.
Okay, for old-fashioned reasons, okay? I started counting from 1 when I was a kid.
Okay? That is my solution representation. Okay? Now, what am I going to do? Okay? My way of solving this problem is, the critical thing is to do my candidate constructor. What are the, suppose I put down queens in position 7, 5, and 1. What are the possible candidates for the fourth position? Okay. Let's try to put this on an 8x8 chessboard just to make sure we understand it. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
First queen was in 7, second queen was in 5, third queen was in 1. So what is my fourth queen? What are the candidate spots for the fourth queen? You want to say 2? Is 2 a possible position? No. Is 3 a possible position? 4 a possible position?
No.
Why? Yes, 4 is not a possible. 5 is not. 6? 7? 8? Okay. So now there's two different ways I could do this queen process. One is, I always set my candidates from 1 to 8. And then later check at the end to see if it's legal. That guarantees I will construct all 8 to the 8th possibilities, right? So let's say you're saying, I want to write my generate candidates easy and make my, is it a solution hard? I could have done it by just sort of expect a complete vector and then check to make sure that every square, no queen is threatened. But that's going to be very slow. Note that here, we only had two candidates that really need to be checked instead of four, instead of eight. So the key of pruning, efficient pruning, is to not do work that isn't going to help you later. Does everybody sort of see that? Okay? So, how did I do this?
When I was programming my eight queen solution, here's my entire application-specific part of the program. What did I do? Okay, how did I process a solution? Let's do the easy thing. All I'm doing is counting the number of solutions. So I just incremented my solution count by one once I had a solution. That was easy. Is it a solution? Well, I'm pruning out possibilities that are not solutions. Like, I'm not ever letting you put down queens such a two or threatening, right? Because I'm going to be preventing, I'm only letting you put down queens that don't threaten somebody already. I will have a solution as soon as I have put down in queens. Right? That's basically what this is saying. And how do I go and generate the moves? Well, basically what I want to do is to take a look at... what am I saying here? The number of candidates is initially zero. The possible candidates range from one to n, right? Because there's that many different columns. So what am I going to do? For every possible column, I'm going to see if it's legal in that row. I said legal move initially is true. I'm then going to go check against every queen that is currently there. Or J goes from 1 to K, and say, does that current, the position of that queen, the J queen, does that threaten the ice square in this row? Okay, and I claim if you do the arithmetic, this is what this thing is basically testing. A diagonal threat is going to be tested here, a column threat is being tested here. Okay, we could go through what those calculations are. Okay, but I think that if you think about it a little bit, you'll see that this is really going to be all that you need to test row and diagonal threats. A move is legal if there is no queen that is already there that threatens it either by a diagonal or a column. Why not a row? Why do you not have to worry about row threats? I'm only going to be putting one queen on the row, right? Okay, and then basically once I find it's a legal move, I stick it in my new candidates array and bump the number of candidates up by one. So this is the my eight queen solution. Any questions about that? And to what extent can we generalize this for the bishop's problem? How does the bishop's problem look like the eight queens problem, and how does it not look like the eight queens problem? Excuse me?
You wouldn't have to worry about the column threat.
I wouldn't have to worry about the column threat, but one possibility is that, suppose I just delete the column threat thing here. Is that going to tell me how many ways I can put down queens?
No, that means you have to change it more significantly because you could have any number of bishops in a row. Right now, we don't
right.
have that.
So it's not quite the same logic here, because now I'm allowed to have multiple bishops per row. Okay, yeah?
When I was thinking about this, I wasn't able to figure out how to implement it, but if you shift the board by 45 degrees, then what happened was the amount of spaces in each row, from that perspective, it's not the same, but the old rule, you only have one bishop for each row, kicks in again.
Okay, now this is an interesting idea. Okay, does everybody sort of see this? If you want to preserve the same structure here, maybe we're better off tilting our heads. Okay? And now,
within, instead of having our state space reflect rows, what if we have our state space reflect diagonals? This still has the property that we want, that there's never going to be two things in the same diagonal. Does everybody agree with that? And so what is our state vector going to look like? I claim that what it's really going to be now is every solution is going to be described by a vector of elements in the diagonal. How many diagonals, if we have an n by n chessboard, how many diagonals will it have? N? Well, it's okay. I start counting with small numbers. Okay? I mean, that's how I learned to count. Okay? So what if we have for a 2x2 chessboard, how many diagonals did we have?
Three.
Okay. And a 3x3 chessboard, how many diagonals did we have?
Five.
One, two, three, four, five. So what is it going to be? 2n minus 1, I think I believe now. Okay? And for a 1x1 chessboard, check it out. 2 times 1 is 1, yeah, it's 1 diagonal. Okay? So this is how big my state vector is, it seems to me. And what is the range of numbers that I can put in each candidate? Okay?
N.
Wait, what's the maximum number of, we sort of agree, how many candidates are there from column 1?
1.
Or empty. Right? Because I'm allowed to have empty queens, I think, in this problem, right? What are my number choices for 2? How many possibilities do I have in column 2? 1, 2, or empty? Which column is going to be the one that gives me the most choices? The end column will be 1 through n, or blank, right? And then it goes down. Does everybody agree with that? Are there any questions about it? Okay. So this to me seems like a possible state vector situation, right? Now what would we do? Let's think about what our applications are. Under what condition do we process a solution? Let's think a little bit about this thing. Or let's think what these things are. What are the candidates for the ith position? Think about it, actually. Are all these candidates correct? So what am I going to want to do?
Well, you want to check. You know they're clear on this diagonal, so the only thing you have to check is the other diagonal.
Is there some other diagonal that will affect it, right? Does everybody sort of see that? So basically, what is my procedure going to do? Okay, if I want to do this in the way that I'm doing it now. It seems to me that basically I'm going to want to loop from I goes from 1 to something like, K is the number of the queen that I'm now considering. My set of moves are, my one candidate is the empty candidate. Another candidate is the, let's think about this thing. What are the other candidates that I might have? So basically go sort of four, if this was the diagonal, for the other diagonal, go sort of from dimension. But I don't know how we want to talk about the squares on the diagonal. Okay, but basically this is saying for every other square on the diagonal, check to see does it cause trouble with some existing bishop, right?
So, I mean, there's a little bit of change here. You shouldn't be writing this without thinking. Okay, but that's basically what it's doing. Okay? And then, you know, if it's still legal, add it to the list of candidates. Okay, does everybody see that? Is there any other changes, though, that we might want to make for this problem? Okay, let's make sure, first of all, everybody sort of see this. I want you to get this one. Okay? Any comments or questions so far?
I just don't know how to implement it. That's that worries me. I can kind of see it. I just don't know how to implement it.
Well, let's think what it means now. How might I implement it? Let's try the naive way to implement it. What way to implement this? Does anyone want to suggest a way to implement this? Let's try a naive way. It's maybe clever. Let's try to, if we don't have clever, let's think about straightforward. Suppose I have put a bishop here and a bishop here. And I want to know what spots I have in the third diagonal. How could I do that? Yeah?
What I would do is you're going to have a loop that's going to check through each diagonal.
Yeah.
And you want to know if the number is, that number is 1. In that first row, we have.
Yeah.
But basically, what you want to do is say, okay, in this position, it's got a value.
Yeah.
I want to subtract 1 from that value every time as I move through this.
So that's how you're going to move from here to there.
Right.
Okay.
And then what I want to do is I want to see whether the next diagonal has an intersection with the spot I'm in.
Right. So the real question is, the real primitive that you need is, given a queen on this diagonal and a queen on that diagonal, do they intersect each other? Right? Now, how can we do this? Okay? Well, one way to do it is, I mean, I'm just thinking about this out loud, a couple different ways you might do this. One way to do it might be to think of these queens on diagonals as lines. Okay? And the real question is, actually, for a given queen, does it lie on the line generated by another queen? Right? That's when there's trouble. So how could you do this? The simplest way might be for each one of this, figure out for any queen, for any bishop, which squares does it hit? Okay, what are the coordinates of the squares that it hits? Okay, and basically there's going to be a loop here. This goes from, you know, it's going to, you know, subtract 1 from this, add 1 to it. Subtract 1 to it, add 1 to it, right? And if any of the squares you hit is the question that you have in mind, that is the, you know, sort of means that this queen can't do it. Why can't we put this queen over here? Because it's lying on another, this bishop here, because it's lying on another bishop's line. Does everybody sort of see that? So at the very least, once you can generate the list of squares for a given bishop, and given your representation, you should be able to write a program that loops through and identifies what the squares are for that bishop. You could do this by testing that. Okay? Is that sort of a clear or agreeable? Okay. Another way to do it, a simpler way to do it, although maybe a clumsy way to do it, would be, again, right now I want you to get it to work, so we'll deal with clumsy. One possibility is you build a bit vector of which squares are currently threatened. Okay? Could you sort of, given a set of a blank chessboard, and given a certain positions of some bishops, tell me which squares are threatened so far. And this basically set those bits high. Well, is this square threatened? It's occupied, so I guess, you know, we're not going to want to do that. It's, you know, in general, is this square threatened? Yes, it's because it's on that line.
So for each bishop, trace through and put an X, you know, so not an X, put a star on everything that it threatens. This bishop threatens this one. This one squares threatened twice, but that's okay. And the remaining things are still candidates for bishops. Does everybody sort of agree with that?
Yeah.
Okay? So you could do it this way, okay? Or you could do it in the other way. Any questions, Jim?
One advantage to this that I found, because this is how I started doing it initially when I was first going through it, is that it's very easy to count the number of candidates you have. So, for instance, when you get here, like, if we're trying to see how many different ways can you get four bishops on.
Right.
We get to this point, and we know all of those spots are completely safe. So we say, oh, we have five spots open, great. That's it. But then the problem is I ran into some problems basically having to store, basically creating.
So, what I think what you're trying to say is there's another question of pruning. Is that what you're now talking about?
Yeah.
So one thing that he's doing, we agree that this is going to allow him to tell you what places you can put the bishop on. Okay, and what are the possible places you can put bishops? But under what condition? Can you tell me any condition under which we can prune it? So even though there is, I mean, somehow the thing we've talked about so far does not tell you anything about the number of bishops you're putting down. Right? Doesn't this problem tell you you want to count how many ways there are to do it to put down 10 bishops? Where does the number 10 come in? Okay. How do we sort of, why do we know if, when we're limiting the burden, we want to put down exactly 10 bishops. How do we use that?
Yes. The 10th diagonal that we actually put a bishop down on instead of putting a, null.
Right. So the moment we put down our 10th bishop, our 10th non-null character, we have a solution. Okay, does everybody agree with that? So now, is a solution is no longer going to be, return k equals n, count the number of non-null people you have so far. And if the number of non-null people equals n, or k, or whatever, whatever your notation is, then that's when you report a solution. Okay, does everybody sort of see that? Any questions? Is there any way that we can use this fact that about the number of bishops we want to put down to prune a solution that isn't going to go anyplace? Okay. How do we know that an early, suppose let's say that I want to put down 2n bishops minus 1 bishops on an n by n chessboard. That's the maximum possible, right? What happens if I don't put a bishop down on the first row, first column? Then I cannot complete it. Does everybody agree with that? So how should I incorporate that kind of an idea? Yeah?
If the number of bishops we have left is larger than the number of diagonals,
that is certainly true. Does everybody sort of see that? This is now how you do pruning. Where do we do this? Where do we do the pruning? Where do we do this kind of pruning? Okay, based on the number of diagonals left and stuff like that. Where should we be doing this pruning in this formulation I have here? Construct candidates. Where in construct candidates should I be doing that?
Right at the start.
Right? Basically, if maybe I should also, as part of my input or some global variable, how many queens have I already put down in my partial solution, right? I can either recompute it or maybe store it someplace. Then basically, if the number of queens I need is different than the number of diagonals remaining, what is the number of diagonals remaining, by the way? How would you compute from in construct candidates what the number of diagonals remaining are?
We know how many slots we fill, and we know that
which is k, right? Because
k
filled with either null or non-null.
Right, and we because there's 2n minus 1, right?
So 2n minus 1 minus k is somehow the number of potential possibilities you have. Okay? And whenever you want to put down more, and you know that you've already put down a certain number so far, if you don't have enough room to put down the rest of the bishops, you'd better backtrack immediately. Does everybody sort of see that? Okay. Any other questions or ideas about this? Okay. That I want to claim, once you've done this, you're pretty close to an almost reasonable program for generating, solving the queen's problem, the bishop's problem. Okay? Any other questions or ideas? Okay? Any other ideas? Yeah?
One idea I was thinking about for determining whether a candidate is reasonable is you really have to be on the diagonal. And you also, if I'm
trying to figure out something for this third diagonal,
then I
know I have to go, okay, well, I'm going to check this diagonal.
Yeah.
But I don't really have to check this diagonal because it's a parity issue. Nothing in here can ever intersect with anything here. So I only have to check every other row.
Okay, so let's look at what we've said here. What he's basically just said is that a chessboard has black squares and a chessboard has white squares. Okay? Why is that? Well, let's draw a chessboard. It's a 4x4 chessboard. Let's say that these are the black squares. And yes, it does have black squares and white squares. What difference does that make to us?
Bishop that starts on a black square is always going to be on a black square no matter how it moves.
So what you're saying is a black square, a bishop on the black square has no impact on the disposition, a bishop on the white square. Right? Okay. Everybody see that? Does anybody see a way we might be able to exploit this to reduce our search space even more? Question.
Yeah.
What? Meaning what? Okay. So let me tell you one other observation you might use to make this much quicker. First of all, everybody, any questions so far? There's one last little trick that might help, okay? Which is sort of people are starting to catch on, okay? What I showed you before was a vanilla way to go through and, a frame which now should be reasonably straightforward, okay? Not trivial, but reasonably straightforward. To go and enumerate all the bishop locations. Do we really need to enumerate all the bishop locations? Construct every set of possible bishops? Is that what it's asking us for, is to construct the set of all possible bishop locations? What's it asking us for?
Just the number of possible bishops.
To count them. What size number did they use in the example here? How big can that number be? 10 to the 15th. Is 10 to the 15th a big number or a little number? It's a big number. Okay? So it looks to me that if we have to actually construct all 10 to the 15th locations, possibilities, we might be in trouble, right? How can we avoid constructing all possibilities? Okay? Yeah?
Well, if it really was that large, you couldn't even just bring, saying everything is possible, so just add one every time. You're not going to have enough cycles.
But you're telling me it's not even fast enough to count
right.
Up to 10 to the 15th.
So what presumably what you're doing is going, OK, okay, well, if I have this subset of solutions, then I can do some rotations and end up with more solutions. And I can have some reflections and come up with more solutions. Something like that, or some kind of way to generalize from a smaller set.
Well, how can we generalize from a smaller set using this observation? Okay? How many ways are there to put down, let's take a look at this thing. How many ways, can we figure out how many ways are there to put down n queens, n bishops, or 2n minus 1 bishops, excuse me, on an n by n chessboard? Without actually constructing all possibilities.
Zero.
Say there's zero ways to do it? You might be right, okay? Well, let's make it something else, okay? Something small. I claim that if we have k bishops down, one way to think about it is that you're going to have k1 bishops on white and k2 bishops on black. Right? Does everybody agree that if you're going to put down k bishops, some of them are on white, some of them are on black? What other color can they be on? No other color. So, k1 plus k2 equals k. Suppose I told you how many ways there were to put k1 bishops on white. And how many ways there were to put K2 bishops on black? How many ways are there to put down K bishops on the board such that K1 of them are on white and K2 of them are on black? Okay. Does everybody see that? Multiply them. Right? So really, if there are C1 ways of putting them down, and C2 ways of these, the number of ways of doing it with this many K1 and this many K2, this many white and this many black, is C1 times C2. Okay? Does everybody sort of see that? Okay? In fact, this problem, I think, is just small enough that if you're very clever, you might be able to do it by brute force. But in fact, it was a cut-down version of a much larger problem. Okay? Suppose can we use this observation and separate the problem of white bishops and black bishops? That's really what I want you to do now. How many ways are there to put down K1, you know, we have a 3x3 board. How many ways are there to put down two bishops on black here? You have to tell me what white and black are, right? So let's say I color it like this. That's black. The ones I colored were black. So there's four black squares. How many possible ways are there to put down two black bishops? Everybody agree that there's two of them? Which ways? These two and those two, right? So the number of ways of putting down two black bishops is two. How many ways are there of putting down three white bishops? The white ones are white. Is it possible to put down three white bishops? How many ways are there to put down two white bishops? How many ways?
Four.
I think four, right? Because if I pick this one, I've got two choices there. If I pick this one, I've got two choices there, right? So there's four ways to do it. How many ways are there to put down two white and two black pictures on a 3x3 chessboard. Well, let's just think about it. Okay, well, how many were there for here? I forgot.
Two.
So
we have 3x4. So we have at least 8 solutions.
At least 8 solutions. There's exactly 8 solutions with 2 bishops, 2 white and 2 black, right?
Right. So we just have to determine whether there's a possibility to have 3 blacks or 3 whites. And I don't
think okay, so let's think about that. How many ways are there? You're saying now to put down how many ways there are to put down 4 bishops on a board. How many are there? Well, we can either have 4 white and 0 black, of which you're telling me that there is no way to do that, right? Or there's 3 white and 1 black. How many ways are there to put down 3 white? None, right? So this is not counting. How many ways are there to put down 3 black and 1 white and 3 black?
None.
And how many ways are there to put down 0 and 4? Well, none. In fact, there are only 8 possible ways to put down 4 bishops, right? So I claim that, in fact, we can reduce this problem to counting basically how many ways there are to put down bishops on one, k bishops on one color. For each color, for any K. And then I claim it's short work from there. Does everybody sort of agree with that? Or any questions about that? This tests your counting a little bit as well. Okay? Any questions? Okay? A little bit clever. Okay? But, what? And the other ideas are observations. In fact, is there a connection between white and the number of white ways to put down white bishops and the ways to put down black bishops? Someone actually thinks there's some level of symmetry, isn't there?
Well, it's an even number. They have to be.
An even sized board. Does everybody agree that in an even sized board, the number of ways to put down white bishops and black bishops has got to be the same, right? Because it's the exact same thing. And what about an odd board? I want to claim that there's some way to sort of think about this as maybe being on a smaller board or something like that. So if you think this thing through, it's actually a relatively elegant way to do it. Okay? Any questions? Okay? Again, the counting part is hard, and if you can't get that far, I encourage you at least to try the, although actually once you understand this, it's not that hard. If you refuse to learn how to count and only want to learn how to search, do the naive way, okay? Although I expect you're going to run out of time, okay? But in fact, if you do it with the clever counting, okay, you can in fact make short work of this. Any questions? Okay. So this is basically, the backtracking here is somewhat simple, okay? Although the, the backtracking is somewhat simple, although there seems to be that counting part at the end. Any questions? And in fact, if you're really clever, maybe you can do it without the backtracking at all and just do counting. But that's something I don't want to, do it. In fact, I think it could be done. But you can think about that. That might even be much easier. Okay? Any questions? Okay? Any questions about this one? Should I move on? Okay. The one that I want to talk about now is the pure backtracking 15 puzzle. Let's think about that one. Because maybe that's, I can tell people, some people are frightened by what I've been saying today.
Or how do people feel? They feel frightened or they feel happy?
Actually, I
want to
think more about this.
Yeah, in fact, you can do it by counting and not even generating. Okay? But that's something to think about. Okay? But now you had a program that did this, you say, in 12 hours, right? 12 hours for solving, what does it say, for solving a 15th puzzle. How did you do it? Okay, what is the 15th puzzle? Let's remember this thing. We say we've got here a, how many lines long is your program? What do you think, 100 lines? About 100 lines, okay. Which at 100 lines times 12 hours, divided by 12 hours is, about 15 minutes per line or something like that, okay? But let's think what the problem is. The problem is you're given the slider puzzle representation, and you want to figure out, you want to start from a particular state, you want to end up with it nicely sorted, okay? And you, let's just think about what you want to do. You want to figure out the shortest path from one state to another. Correct? How did you do it? Tell me about your solution. What did you do? So what you did was,
what did you do exactly? You're telling me that you
started out, did you use the backtrack shell, or did you do it some other way?
Coded your own thing, which is fine. And so what you do, you started out with the optimal solution, with the current solution, right? And what did you do from here? You said, so how did you represent your board? You said you had an index IC, an array of size 16, with your board representation. And you said what was in each spot, right? Was a number from 1 to 15 or a blank? Maybe it was 0 or something like that. Okay? And so what did you do at each step? Was this recursive?
Yeah.
So when did you stop moving a space? So you're basically telling me your procedure, as I understand it right now, is basically saying you had a current solution. So it was sort of solved. You took as input the solution, your current state, okay, which was your array and maybe some other information. And what did you do? You said basically, for each possible move of 0, possible move, you did what? You moved it, and then you did what? You called solve recursively? Okay? Under what condition will, does everybody see what he's saying or what I'm saying he's saying? Now, under what condition is this going to stop? Okay, so what you're saying is you stop, basically, when you hit a solution within 50, when you have gone 50 moves, or you have got the shorter solution, right? So basically, something you kept in here was the length of the current solution, right? How far have you gotten? Right? You had an array of solutions. So right now what you're saying is you're building all solutions. So you've built an array of all solutions?
Yeah. found a short solution for us. You can even try going first one, and try by cutting down to the stock pool solution.
Okay, well, let's first think about, think what he's doing now. You're basically instructing all of these. You did it on the inputs we had here, right? You say you took 12 hours on the inputs here?
Yeah.
And did it ultimately return the same answer? Okay. Now, what's going to happen with the search that he's doing here? Is his search going to be working in a breadth-first manner or a depth-first manner? What? I hear depth here. What's going to happen in his perceived traversal of this tree of all solutions? How is it doing it? It starts out of the current state, makes a move, then immediately calls the recursive thing, right? Calls it recursively and goes down. Is this a breadth-first solution or a depth-first solution? Depth-first solution. So when he finds his first solution, is it the shortest possible path or not?
No.
You don't know. Okay? Which would be, would it be better to traverse this tree in a breadth-first manner? Okay? I would probably say yes on this case. Right? So how might I store this as in a breadth-first manner? Okay, let's stop and think about this. What is the difference between the breadth-first, to make this breadth-first instead of depth-first? What do I want to do?
Start at the beginning and figure out all your... all possible first moves.
So say from here, I can go to here in one move. Right? And now what do I want to evaluate?
Do you have a solution?
Is this a solution, solution, solution? If not, what do I want to do?
All possible moves. Next level.
Okay? Now, in this case, if I do this, I think the first time I come to a solution, I will find the shortest possible solution. Does everybody agree with that? Okay? But let's think a little bit before we get some coffee. Okay? How do we implement this? What do I have to change to his procedure here? Yeah?
First thing that comes to mind for me is you have to store all of those intermediate solutions somehow.
Have to store the intermediate solutions somehow.
And then basically, so you store, like, the first time you call it, you have your vector or whatever that has all of your solutions, or all of your states, which is just one.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you run through it, you're throwing the intermediate states into that vector. And then you have to recall that. Then you have to basically loop through that vector.
Okay, so one way to do this is, when you're telling me you have to actually store the solution, right?
That's not
an unreasonable one, but now tell me something. How does the other one, store your partial solutions?
Yeah.
How does the normal backtrack procedure store the solution?
It stores them on the stack.
Stores them on the stack, the implicit stack. How do you want to store it now? Do you want to store it on a stack? Well, what do you want to store it on?
You can store it on an instance variable in the function itself.
Well, but separately, what do we want to do? Do we want to store it on a stack, or what do we want to store it on? Do we want to go to the... I think I heard this word Q. Okay? Isn't it true that I want to store it so that I expand? The next one I expand is the one that is sitting in the queue the longest. Let's think about that, right? Suppose on every solution here, okay, I
NQ. Then I DQ. Right? So my first claim would be that conceptually you might want to do this using a, you know, basically, if you want to do this in a breadth-first manner,
okay,
which seems like a good thing, possibly, because the first solution you get, you win. Really, what you want to do is now, for each possible position, let's now rewrite this. I think the solve is going to go like this. Solve a particular position, given the current state. What would I do? Okay, I would probably do something like this. For each possible move, okay, is it a solution? Else, NQ, new state. Right? And then, what do I do after I've tried these possibilities? I would probably do something like solve PQ of the state. Right? Or I would probably take the recursion out, to be honest with you, and make that a loop here. Okay? Does everybody see what I'm doing here? Basically, I'm explicitly enqueuing each state, okay, with the hope that I will later, you know, and basically the first time I see one, I will, you know, see a solution that I claim that will be the shortest possible solution. Okay? Any questions? Now, is this efficient yet? Let's think about what layer might or might not be efficient. Any comments? Yeah? I spent that there.
With each move you make, there's always one move to get back to where you start from.
Yeah.
So you can always get that out. That's always the right.
I see. So one of the problems with your say here is, why is it a bad thing to take a move to go back to where I was? I've used two moves and accomplished nothing, right? So, how might I solve that problem?
Let's do a simple test before you do it. If you look at this, oh, wait a minute,
I'll
give you back the earlier problem. So, what's that after I have become a referee to the five-second cell? Because the movement sequence that you made, like it's not just the last movement you made, it's also you made.
I see. So what you're saying is a couple of different things. One thing that's true is we agree that going from a square to the next square, okay, and then back gets us back to the same state. Is there any other way to get back to the same state? Yeah? Could do a four-dial rotation or some other stuff like this. So how could we eliminate those? And you say you don't ever want to get back to the state you've already seen because you already know a shorter way to do that, right? How could we avoid that if you wanted to do it? Hash. Okay? What does hash mean?
Basically, come up with some way to the holds the state of the object.
Right.
And then you have a hash function and you basically say, oh, right. How about every time you reach a state, you throw it into the hash table or you check the hash table and you say, oh, geez, I've been here before and if there's something in that table.
Does everybody see that that might be a solution? What if whenever you see an element, you keep a hash table? And whenever you where every time you have visited a position,
you store that position in a hash table, right? And then you can look it up to see what's your situation going to be. For each possible move, if I have not yet visited it, which is determined by looking it up in a hash table, perhaps, then stick it on the queue, right? That way I'm going to stick every element there only once. Okay? Does everybody sort of believe that? And now I claim that I potentially have, this has the advantage that I'm never going to go to duplicates now, right? It's going to cost me some memory, which might be a problem. Okay? But I will avoid doing any duplicate searching. Does everybody sort of agree with that in principle? Any other ideas that, okay, does everybody see how you could do that? Okay, so I can send you off and say you could program that if you wanted, right? Any questions? Any other ideas how we might make this more efficient? I'm still not convinced that's good enough. Maybe it's good enough, maybe not. Is there any other ideas that you can come up with to reduce search? Yeah?
I mean, ideally, what you would like to do is in each state say, am I closer to a solution or not?
Okay.
Am I not closer? Coming up with that is really kind of hard.
Okay. You'd like to figure out, am I making progress? And that I don't see offhand how to do. Let's just try a 9 puzzle solution because I don't really understand. 1, 4, 2, 9, blank, 5, 6, 7.
Actually, it should go up to 9.
It's up to 8, you're right. 8 puzzle. Oh, what did I do? 3. So am I close to a solution or not? Okay, I don't know. Okay, am I close to a solution? Sort of looks like I'm kind of close, but I don't know. It's not obvious to me whether I'm close or not. Okay? But can you tell me if I'm far from a solution? Yeah? So what is a measure of how far I am from a solution? Okay, I think you have an interesting idea. What is it?
A minimum number moves to a solution.
So how many moves do I need to finish this definitely? Where is the right position, the right final position? Okay. Can someone show me at least how many positions am I away from doing? You're trying to solve it.
He's trying
to tell me how far away I am.
So basically you need to know, okay, what means you, one is in the right spot, two is in the right spot, three is the right spot, four is the right spot, five isn't. So it has to move at least two spots. Six has to move at least two spots. Seven has to move at least two spots. Eight moves.
Everybody agree that it will take at least 8 moves from this position?
I'm assuming we don't have to count the blank.
Well, the blank, if you move everybody to the right spot, and you can tile, the blank takes care of itself, right?
I wasn't sure.
No, that's a fair question. Okay. So this is interesting. Is this helpful to us in some way? Now, this is one thing that's interesting now. You're telling me I have to finish within 50 moves, or 45 moves, maybe. Didn't they tell me that I could always do it in 45 or something like that? I don't know.
They can always do it in 45.
Well, if you find the shortest possible way to do it, then it better be within 45, since they're telling the truth. Often the kids. How might this be helpful?
Well, what you can do is, okay, how many reasonable moves are there? Figure out, okay, what's the minimum number of moves now for each one of them?
Yeah.
Take the one that's the smallest and work from there. Now go from there. What's the possible moves? Which one gives you the most limited movement to go down that way? Which allows you to disregard the branches that are obviously dead ends.
Right, except for I don't think those are necessarily dead ends. We know that's the minimum number of moves, but it might be the case that one that has a minimum number of 9 moves is actually closer than a minimum number of 8 moves.
Right, so it's not necessarily true. Right, this says it'll make at least 8 moves, right, and it will take at least $10 till I'm a millionaire. Okay, but that doesn't mean that I'm, you know, put me next to Bill Gates, you know, where, you know, I mean, there's somebody else who is also $10 from being a millionaire, but is a lot closer than I am, right?
Yeah.
But I still think this is useful information.
Sure.
How do we use it?
If you know that you have at least 8 moves to go before you have a solution, and you're at 40 moves,
right,
you can quit now if you're not going to make it.
So this gives us a way to balance how many moves are necessary. Okay? If we need a solution within 45 moves, we have done 20 moves so far, and any move from now, and we have to do at least 25 moves from here, we can't do it, can we? So this gives us a way to identify whether somebody is going to be a dead end here, way in advance, possibly, of where it's actually got to go. Everybody sort of see that? How big can this quantity be for our lower? So this is somehow, it might be an algorithmic technique called branch and bound.
If you ever want to look it up in a book or something, you don't mumble about it that much anymore. But it's
basically what you're doing here is saying, look, at any state in my trade, to get to here cost me, so far, my height of my trade, right? To get from here to a solution I know is greater than or equal to my lower bound, right? Which in this case is the sum of the moves that have to be made. So if this plus this is bigger than my allowed target, I should give up right here, correct? And this, now I've got ways to prove my search, right? I can avoid looking at a hopeless position, and I can avoid looking at duplicates, okay? And together, that should cut down my search space substantially. Any questions? Let's think about that, okay? Let's think how much this lower bound idea might help on a typical 16 puzzle instance. Let's say I've got a random instance here. How many numbers are there that might be out of order?
You can have a little color.
15, okay, maybe 15. It's something 15-ish, okay?
Wow.
Okay. How far out of position might an element be? Okay, how many spots?
On average, it's probably around 3 or 4.
Well, what's the most an element could be out of position?
Six,
right? I think so. I think it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay. So this is not necessarily a bad lower bound for a lot of, for some really crummy solutions. This should get rid of it pretty quickly, right? And that might be a way to do it. Okay? Any questions about it? So I want to claim this might be, again, there's a couple different ideas we've batted around. Okay? But this might be enough of an idea to basically take you all the way or most of the way. Okay? Certainly, your 12-hour stuff should go away. Okay? And whether you get it down to 10 seconds is another question. Okay, by just this trick.
But I would imagine, if I were thinking about doing this, some form of using the pruning based on the, you know, based on a lower bound, coupled with, and what happens once you are, you know, there's several different ways you could think about this. Is depth-first search better than breadth-first search now? Let's think about this. Okay? There's a certain amount of mechanics to store the, shortest, you know, to do it in breadth-first versus depth-first.
It depends on the problem. Some problems you want to do it through depth, others you want to do it through breadth.
Yeah. So I don't, you know, well, man, I don't know. Okay? I do think depth-first is probably easier. But it won't necessarily find the first solution. The first solution might not be the shortest. But if you appropriately, you know, avoid doing, you know, dumb things, okay, maybe the first solution you find is going to short that 45 down to 23. And then it's a lot, then your lower bound's going to kick in and prune out some more things. Okay? Any questions? Doesn't specify it has to be the shortest. In fact, all it has to say is
it doesn't have to be.
So in fact, what it really says is you don't necessarily need the shortest solution. You need to know when you're going hopelessly astray, right?
So maybe breadth-first search is not a good idea, is it? Okay? That's a bad thing for us to talk about for a while. Okay? But depth-first search might be a good idea. And the problem is to avoid doing, you know, taking too long. And one way to do that would be to somehow avoid either duplicates or at the very least dumb duplicates going back and forth. That you got. Okay. So that would be one way to do it, to get rid of that.
And then the screen would elaborate between 21 and the top potential to a high cycle.
Okay, then you specifically talk the four dial cycle.
But there might be other cycles.
Well, let's think what we could do to maybe do it. Now we're not doing it in breadth first search anymore. Now we're doing it in depth first search, right? How can we catch duplicate moves in depth first search? To make sure we're not caught in a cycle. Right, why don't you have a stack of the previous game boards you've encountered so far? Right? And then basically for every move, you go and say, I'm now going to generate a new position. Is this one that I have seen before? Okay? So you shouldn't cycle, regardless. Now whether this is a win or not depends upon how often you get weird, you know, something longer than a cycle of four, but less than, you know, a cycle of 50 or something.
A cycle of four, and I guess it's going out to 12 times. It has to be three cycles of four.
Well, no, you can have a cycle of four. I would like to claim that if I just take this guy around, chug, it should be four moves.
But yeah, but you're not back where you started.
Oh, no, so you're right, so it's 12 at least.
Yeah.
So that may or may not be worth checking, especially when you've got this long cutoff. Well, but it depends. You're the one that's so slow, so you're not an expert on the rules. It's good that you got to work. I'm not going to give you a hard time here, okay? But what is true is, with this lower bound, you might be able to do better, okay? To immediately eliminate things that are bad. What else might you do? If we're not looking for necessarily the shortest, maybe we can do it just by doing his depth-first search with the lower bound. Is there any other idea how we might get to a solution faster if that doesn't work? Yeah? Okay. You could use a secondary consideration. But another possibility might be to do, instead of a depth-first search or a breadth-first search, maybe you should do a best-first search. Well, it would mean to do the best possibility. Okay? This is something I just want to throw out so you have something to think about. Okay? What if you've got a bunch of possibilities at any given stage in the tree? Let's say we're doing a sort of building of this tree as we come along. Which is the next state that we should try to advance? Okay? Breadth first meant we were going through it like this, right? Depth first meant we were going like this. But how might this node, why might this node be more promising than that node? Is there any way that we know? Not as far away from our lower bound, right? Suppose this one's at a height of 10 and is at least 30 moves. And this one's at a height of 10 and has at least 5 more moves. Might you be better off exploring this one first?
As long as we don't need the shortest one, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So you've got some dimensions to play with here. This might be a good this might be the more accessible of the two we've talked about. I'll tell you the truth. The first one is accessible to cleverness counting. Easily. Okay? But as far as backtracking type techniques, this one may now be pretty accessible. Okay? And I think there might be some, you know, I'd like to see you try to do that. Okay? Once you get the hang of it, backtracking is a lot of fun. Okay, I like backtracking. Backtracking is fun. Okay, so I urge you to have some fun, and we'll talk about it next class. Okay, thank you.